From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell with the news on this day in Maine, January 30th, 2020. Some 4,500 rural homes and 215 businesses will soon have faster internet as part of a pilot USDA rural development project. Four projects will share in almost $10 million from the USDA Reconnect program. One business owner who says he's happy with the news is Carlos Barrio Nuevo of Georgetown, who moved to the area 5 years ago from a major city. He says he realized then that Maine had an amazing quality of life, but
what I did not realize was that Georgetown had only gotten rid of dial-up a couple of years previous to me moving in.
Barrio Nuevo says the lack of broadband has remained a problem for businesses, but it's also an obstacle for residents, summer residents, who could extend their residency beyond the summer.
And part of the reason they don't stay longer is they don't have, you know, the connectivity that allows them to feel comfortable moving their job, you know, up here for a certain amount of time.
The largest chunk of funding, about $7 million in grants and loans, will go to Biddeford Internet Corporation to provide service to nine communities across southern and western Maine. Other projects are based in Arousic, Monhegan, and Roque Bluffs. Citing increasing financial challenges, a nonprofit agency that provides in-home care services for just under 600 older Mainers and adults with physical disabilities announced that it will be closing its doors at the end of April. The agency has primarily focused on delivering services to low-income residents who receive Maine care. Newell Auger, an attorney for Home Care of Maine, says the lack of an increase in the Maine care reimbursement rate to compensate for the hike in the state minimum wage, along with other government mandates and a shortage of workers, has left the provider with no other option but to close down.
If you're losing as much as 50 cents an hour for every hour of work you're providing or hour of service, there's no way any business, for profit or otherwise, can stay in business at that rate.
Auger says Home Care for Maine believes most of its employees will likely be able to find work with other agencies. He says the provider is more worried about finding services for its current clients. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell. We'll have more Maine news in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
First today rebuked Central Maine Power for its poor customer service, reducing its shareholder profits by almost $10 million over the next 18 months, and requiring a comprehensive management audit. The action caps a long investigation of the company's botched rollout of a new billing system. Fred Bever reports.
Public Utilities Commission Chairman Philip Bartlett calls it the most serious penalty ever imposed on an electric utility in Maine, and it's one that will likely result in the lowest return on equity earned by any electric utility company in the country.
Our decisions today hold CMP accountable and require CMP to dramatically change how it treats its customers. CMP must demonstrate that service and reliability are its top priorities.
CMP has been under fire since its rollout of a new billing system in 2017, which led to numerous billing errors, some $5 million in overcharges, and widespread unhappiness among customers who faced an uphill battle just to get through to CMP representatives. The panel says CMP cut corners in the run-up to and launch of its new smart care billing system, which coincided with the October 2017 windstorm. CMP's shareholders, the commission says, will have their return on equity reduced to 8.25% for 18 months beginning in March. That's close to a $10 million hit on company profits. And after 18 months, CMP will have to prove it is meeting a host of service quality benchmarks or continue with the reduced rate of return. And CMP will have to compensate customers for billing errors, even if they never filed a complaint.
It is CMP's responsibility to ensure the accuracy of the bills it issues, to communicate effectively with customers, to be responsive to customer concerns, and to restore customer confidence in the company. To be sure, if CMP fails to do these things, we will continue to hold them accountable. But to right this ship, CMP must take responsibility for past failings and commit to earning the respect and trust of its customers.
I am pretty well satisfied. I just would like to see a little bit more given to the consumer.
Valerie Harris is a CMP customer from Brunswick and an intervener in the case that led to the PUC's actions. She says the commission should still require a forensic audit of the apparent billing errors and get to their root cause. But while the commission did find that there was not a systemic problem with CMP's billing and meter systems, it did order that remaining overbilling complaints be considered on a case-by-case basis and that the PUC itself adjudicate cases where customers and CMP still do not agree.
The word of the day is accountability.
Barry Hobbins, the state's public advocate, says the commission is also requiring a top-to-bottom audit of the company's management structure, and he credits grassroots efforts by consumers to bring the issues to light.
They kept this issue in the forefront in people's minds, and Central Maine Power Company will never, ever be able to do what they did, because Maine ratepayers will not forgive them. And they have to rebuild the trust. And I think they should have an opportunity to do that, but they must strictly adhere to the order.
While CMP had argued against many of the actions the regulators chose, company spokesperson Catherine Hartnett says it wants to see the full written order, but has no immediate plans to appeal the decision.
We certainly had a faulty implementation of this system. The way the customer service was offered following that put us into this situation. We lost their trust, and we have a long way to go to regain it. But the people on the ground here in Maine are committing to improving that.
The commission did allow a $17 million hike in annual revenues CMP can collect from consumers, saying the increase would cover legitimate operating expenses that have grown since the last rate hike several years ago. That is far less than the $45 million CMP requested. It will add about 2% to monthly bills, but that will be more than offset by a recent drop in the cost of electricity supply. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Last time, they were first-time Maine legislators. Well, now they've returned for a second legislative session. As Erwin Gratz reports, they have returned a little bit wiser about the legislative process, but still excited by it.
Republican State Rep. Abigail Griffin of Levant says she learned some important things last session: how to understand policy, how to interact with people from across the political spectrum. But she admits it was tough.
I'm going to be very honest. I was very overwhelmed. It was a learning curve for me, and I did learn a lot.
And there was a lot to learn. Griffin, a retired school teacher, had little prior experience with the legislature. Democratic State Rep. Lori Gramlich of Old Orchard Beach also acknowledges gaps in understanding the ways of the Maine legislature, and she did have plenty of prior experience with it as a lobbyist and a legislative staffer.
I think those opportunities gave me a very unique perspective, perhaps different from my other freshman colleagues, but I realize that I still don't know everything and have a lot to learn.
Rep. Holly Stover, a Democrat, represents Booth Bay Harbor, and surrounding towns. She was impressed watching the machinery of lawmaking at work.
The number of hours, the tremendous amount of thought that goes into every decision that is made, and the way that people do truly collaborate to do the best that they can for their own constituency. Those are all things that I witnessed and were part of and enjoyed a lot.
All three, plus veteran state rep Ralph Tucker, said the tone at the State House was very collaborative. Tucker of Brunswick said that was not only true among legislators, but between legislators and the executive branch.
We were better able to establish personal direct trust between the legislators sitting on the various committees and their counterparts in the executive departments. And it's that personal contact and trust that makes government work.
Not surprisingly, Tucker, a Democrat, credited fellow Democrat Governor Janet Mills for improving the climate at the State House. Legislating is often at its heart about making choices. Representative Abigail Griffin said she learned about that from her work on the Health and Human Services Committee. There, she heard from a lot of hurting people. People, Griffin says, you want to help.
to be honest, having the money to be able to help them is a problem. So you want to help them, and so your heart just goes out to them, but there's only so much we can do.
Representative Holly Stover learned a similar lesson as she reviewed roughly 1,000 bills that came before the Health and Human Services Committee.
Is it a want or a need? And a lot of times, wants are things, we all have wants and we can't fulfill those, but often these bills represent a serious need, some of them more urgent, and then some of them are just good common sense things for us to have in Maine.
As the legislature made its choices, it left behind some disappointments. Republican Griffin had two big ones: passage of the bill to allow the terminally ill to seek assistance to end their lives, and another to remove religious and philosophical exemptions from the state's vaccination law. Democrat Stover said it was the failure of what she called a long-shot bill to provide better protections for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Democrat Gramlich saw a bill to protect beaches she hoped to pass carried over to this year's session. Despite those setbacks, the three rookie legislators reported they had a good experience working with members of the opposite party. Democratic Rep. Lori Gramlich.
A senator that I'd worked with previously, Senator Searway, and a House member from Lincoln, Representative Sheldon. And they actually both co-sponsored my oral health bill, which was really cool.
But then there was last summer's special session, called to try to put together a bond package. It turned out to be a partisan struggle in which Republicans eventually succeeded in their desire to limit bond proposals to a single transportation issue. Democratic Representative Holly Stover.
And I guess for me, it was a disappointment on a certain level because I found working together encouraging when we were able to come to some negotiated agreements. And on that day, there was not a lot of room for negotiation. And so we didn't get a lot done.
Veteran Representative Ralph Tucker says the rookie legislators may find more of that partisanship in this year's short second session.
Well, we can anticipate more of a political spin on every issue. Some people will be posturing. People will be lining up to decide whether to run for office, to run for leadership. And so there will be more focus on the political aspects of what happens.
Abigail Griffin, for one, is not deterred. Will you seek re-election to a second term?
Yes.
No hesitation whatsoever.
I've already started gathering my signatures, and I'm excited to do it again.
In fact, all three rookies say they plan to seek second terms. Holly Stover.
I feel as though I have a lot to offer to my community and my constituents. I love this work. I love this state. And I love all the people.
Lori Gramlich said the lessons she'll carry forward in her future legislating are do her homework, check in with assumptions, and engage with stakeholders on the issues facing the legislature. Erwin Gratz, Maine Public Radio News.
And the time is just about 14 minutes now before 6 o'clock. Time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
We are still in the midst of a benign and for some balmy midwinter weather as Canadian high pressure remains riveted to the northeast. Stars will blink on and off as high clouds pass by overnight, temperatures dropping to the single digits north and mid-teens far south. We'll close out the month with another quiet and mild day, relatively speaking. Clouds of varying translucency will filter the sun, 24 to 44 north to south. Saturday, generally cloudy with scattered late day and evening flurries, 26 to 41 north to south. Super Bowl Sunday, super quiet. Considerable cloudiness will prevail, only the slight risk of a mountain snow shower late, 27 to 39 north to south. Monday, warming west winds will boost temperatures dramatically in spite of mostly cloudy skies over the northern third of the state, partly cloudy for the majority, 32 to 50 north to south. And a wintry storm seems to be quite the possibility by the middle of next week. And there are no indications of frigid air for at least another week. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's today's Maine News. For more news and stories, visit mainepublic.org. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.